Welcome to the one, the only Lethal Mullet Podcast, live here on the Fandom Podcast Network and also streaming on, of course, the Facebook page at The Lethal Mullet, which is, of course, our little home for video casts here right now for this very podcast, the Lethal Mullet Podcast, your home for all action cinema from the 80s, 90s, noughties and beyond, all here in one place. And I'll tell you what, we're covering one tonight, which is really interesting, and it's one that probably haven't talked a lot about till about now. You know, we've often talked about doing some of the bigger Steven Seagal films in particular. You know, he was really, really popular at this time when, of course, the action cinema at the time was really an all, fever pitch, if you like, particularly in the days of the late 80s where we had Arnold, Sylvester. We had, obviously, Dolph Lundgren, Jean-Claude Van Damme. And in the early 90s, we had, of course, the three or four films that led up to Under Siege that Steven Seagal had done. And they certainly were very ingenious, but also gave us something completely new for the cinema screen. That, of course, is Aikido. And it was really interesting to see how the audiences responded. A lot of us, of course, went out into the dojos and, learnt this mysterious martial art for the time, and learn something completely new. And it's thanks to these movies. These were great films. Up to Under Siege, and beyond that, it got a little bit different. We'll talk about a bit of that today too. All here on episode number 225 of the podcast. I'm your host, Adam O'Brien. Welcome to Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia. Here, literally in the cantina, in the kitchen, in the engine room. Where today we're going to be chatting about, of course, this bad boy, Under Siege, that's right, with Casey Ryback, who was just a chef, that's right, little old cook on a ship, the USS Missouri, and we're going to talk about that tonight, and it's definitely the biggest film that Seagal had done to that point, and certainly was, I think, from there, that was the highest he got in popularity. And from there, it sort of fell off a little bit. We had the second of these films, Under Siege 2 Dark Territory, which, again, was still a big budget film for the time. And then, of course, we had his own directorial debut with, of course, On Deadly Ground, which we'll probably cover one day because of just the what it is. You know, it is an interesting film. It's got some funny bits. It's got some good character moments. There's some great actors in it. Michael Caine's one of them, you know. He had to pay off his house. That's right, his mum's house with the money he got with this movie, yeah? I think it's the same sort of thing that he was doing when he did Jaws the Revenge. Of course, Jaws 4, which I still say to this day is the best of the sequels, just because you got Michael Caine versus Shark. Which I still think's fantastic. So we'll be looking at, of course, Under Siege today, which is a little bit like Jaws, I guess, because it's on the water. But it, of course, deals with a new character, and it's basically, in a nutshell, I'm sure it was said in the pitch for it to die hard on a naval ship. With, of course, a martial arts master to get them through, that being, of course, the chef on the ship. Or the ship's cook, who just happened to be a Navy SEAL. And the character is, of course, Casey Ryback. And, I think this is probably the ultimate vehicle for Seagal at the time. You know, it's interesting. He sort of built up this persona of him being a, I think in the press, at least, the press even built this up, that he was some type of CIA-ish like character in the past, or at least through the films, that sort of persona had come through. And it worked because that definitely amped up the films. You know, you gave it some legitimacy, I guess, at the time. You know, we're not really looking at the background of the actor itself, but at least that was built up in the press, that, you know, that this guy was the real deal. And he certainly had some of the moves at the time. You know, you really think, hey, well, this is legit. This is tough. And those that went out and went to the Aikido dojos know that what he was doing was legit, yes. But what was taught in the dojos is a little bit different. Now, I've experienced both soft style Aikido, and there's some Aikido out there that's pretty hard, but again, it is what it is, and the techniques are the techniques. There's no striking. It's a purely defensive nature of the art itself. So I do believe that what we're seeing, even in this film too, and the choreography and stuff like that, is not just Aikido. It is going back to the roots of that system, which is going back to where O-sensei, Morihei Ueshiba, took, of course, what he did, and then post-war obviously made this more relaxed art. But pre-war, Aikido was heavily influenced by, of course, Daitiru Aiki Jiu-Jitsu. And yeah, so getting down to it, it's more Jiu-Jitsu to a certain extent anyway. But it is a nice art to do. Practicality, not so much, but then again, there is some stuff in there you can definitely take and use. But you definitely need to mix it up with some striking. And I do believe Steven Seagal had done, I've seen some interviews, he's done some karate before, some Shotokan or something like that. And he certainly has been over to Okinawa and been along with some of the masters over there. Actually, one of the masters, which I did an online seminar with a little while ago, back in the, I think it was 2020. Interesting. One of the high up Goju-ryu black belts over there too. So again, those guys go right up into the old age doing that stuff, and shows you. I do believe karate is one of the better ones too. As you get older, you need to still keep your bones strong and your muscles and your suppleness and all that sort of stuff. And it's a great art for doing that too. You know, strength, flexibility, power. Anyway, we're getting back to it. That's basically what this is. This film in particular shows off a myriad of techniques from Aikido, which we'll go through a little bit of today. And amazing, we talk about this great film, which is the most polished that Warner Brothers did, with, of course, Steven Seagal. You know, this is one with Andrew Davis, who did, of course, The Fugitive, and right back to, you know, he was originally going to do, I do believe, Running Man with Arnold Schwarzenegger. So he goes right back. But he, of course, directed the first of the films that Steven Seagal did, which is, of course, Above the Law, or Nico Above the Law, as it was called back in the day. An interesting film, and one that I think, you know, had a little bit more of that persona that Seagal was definitely bringing into film and all that sort of stuff too. But of course, this is the big one. So this film is definitely one that I think, you know, really has encapsulated everything. So obviously it's on the sea. We're getting, naval terminology, and obviously seeing the naval side of the military in this heavily as well. But with that too, on the ship, we've got so many different areas that we're going to see as we go through the film. And again, using this older ship, which is going back to its main port to get disbanded, basically. What's great about it too is that, there's a history that we're going to see with these characters. If we talk about the story soon, between, of course, Tommy Lee Jones, this character, William Stranix, and, of course, Casey Ryback. And it's a nice tie-in. And we get to see some of that too in, I think, I do believe the second film had something similar. But what's great about this one is that it really does build up that whole mysterious Navy SEAL thing with the cooks and all that sort of thing too, being, of course, Ryback, where he punched out an officer. And, of course, from there, we find out, of course, it's somebody we know later on in the story. We'll talk about that. But and, of course, it became this cook that everyone loved the cooking of, and particularly the captain. And, of course, keeps him on the ship afterwards. So that's what's on the menu for today. There you go. There's a theme for the cooking. But, of course, subscribe to, of course, www.fbnet.popping.com, and follow us on Eli the Mullet on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Yes, so to keep you up to date, if you have missed shows and stuff like that, we do put stuff up in the stories section up the top of course, those feeds, so that you can see what's coming up, and little snippets and little trailers of what you'll find in the video show in particular. But of course, the audio shows go out every Tuesday on fpnet.poppy.com. So you'll see, obviously, some of the ones that have been up more recently. So we'll go through some of those. Obviously, the first one being Perfect Weapon, which went out a couple of weeks ago, number 222. Something that you guys have been asking for a little while. But I hate to tell you, we've actually done it before. And we did it back in, where was it, 2020? When I got that, as you can see in the picture here, the DVD copy from the States, the NTSC copy on DVD. Great film. I had it on VHS for years. And Jeff Speakman's definitely one of my martial arts heroes, got to say. And even though I'm studying a style that's a hybrid of Shotokan and Goju currently, I'm going to eventually, once I get my my Shodan, in the full Shodan, in the current style, I am going to move on to Kenpo Karate eventually, because it's just, it's a dream I've always had, and it's definitely more technical, complex art, which I just think is worth doing. Then we also covered, of course, Hamburger Hill, particularly just after Anzac Day. I was in the mood to watch another war film, one I hadn't watched in a while, and of course, now that I've got this beautiful copy on Blu-ray of Hamburger Hill, it was time to go through that, and hopefully you all get out there and check that out one. Sorry, check that film out too if you haven't seen it. Well, I've never seen it before. There's some great actors in that one that you'll obviously know really well now. Don Cheadle has this is probably one of his first roles, and of course we've got Dylan McDermott and of course Courtney B. Vance as well. And of course we just covered another Seagal film on our last live, which was at 224, that is, Mark for Death, which of course saw Seagal go up against the Jamaican drug lord Screwface and his posse. And again, great film, I think. Next to Under Siege, it's his second best film, or vice versa. This could be the best, and Under Siege be the second best. And of course, here we are now with, of course, Under Siege. So let us know in the comments below what you think of Under Siege. Yeah, it's as I have a swig of this coffee here, you know, this is a film which a lot of you out there that have grown up at that time would have remembered, and definitely got a sense of what Aikido master Steven Seagal was trying to do. It's a great film for, I think, the average moviegoer to really, you know, the mainstream audience to really get a sense of what Seagal is all about. And, you know, and it really does. Like, it breaks into that mold. So, Under Siege. I first saw this in cinemas in, whatever it was, 91, I believe, when it came out. And which we'll go into a little bit more of those details. But my first, you know, sighting of this film was after watching, I think it was Alpha Justice. I'd seen Alpha Justice and, you know, I was like, wow, well, this guy's really interesting, especially particularly the way they were, I think, hyping up, you know, what Under Siege was going to be like. And, you know, here's an actor who was quite sinister looking. You know, he had that really, that sort of dark long hair and a ponytail. Really, it looks like a gangster as far as, you know, what I saw of it before I got to know his work. I'd seen Hard to Kill, Above the Law, Mark for Death. And then I had a copy from a friend of mine, gave me a copy of Alpha Justice. And that for me was the best one. Alpha Justice was really a great film, which showed, obviously, Seagal going up against gangsters in New York, if I remember right, throwing people around like ragdolls. And really, it was quite a mean, if anything, take on the peaceful art of Aikido. But, I mean, it's part and parcel of somebody whose friend gets killed and he's, you know, he wants revenge against gangsters. Mm. Local gangs and mafia and all that sort of thing. And there was kind of that going around too. There was kind of this, I was in some of the magazines that I read at the time that, you know, Seagal, you know, was in with the gangsters or something like that. You know? But again, it was just from the movies. You know, he's an actor. That's what all it is. All right, so let's get into it. So, Under Siege is a 1992. There you go, it's 92. Action thriller directed by Andrew Davis, written by J.F. Lawton, and of course stars Seagal as the former Navy SEAL, and now, of course, cook on the ship, the USS Missouri. Hope I'm saying that right. I remember a couple of my pals in the US have said it's Missouri or Missouri. Correct me if I'm wrong there, folks. I have no idea, unfortunately. But either way, great ship and definitely great set to be on for this film. It was released on October 9, 1992, and it was a critical and obviously huge, huge box office and commercial success. This is one that had nominations from the Academy Awards, as well as, you know, it was something that made so much money. And at the time, it really put Seagal right on top. I mean, Seagal was all over the news. He was in a lot of the awards shows and stuff like that too. And the nominations for sound alone, and it was something to savor at the time. Obviously, the main thrust of the film is the USS Missouri gets taken over by terrorists who want to steal the Tomahawks or whatever it was on the thing to use against targets in the US and abroad. And of course, Tommy Lee Jones is the head of those. And we'll talk about a little bit more about his amazing cast of bad guys. It's a real rogues gallery, folks. You know, it's almost feel like sort of a Batman sort of situation where you got the rogues gallery is almost better than the hero in terms of the great cast and stuff like that you've got in this. And it is a bloody strong cast. All right, so let's get into it. Obviously, this is the best film that Seagal has done as far as the public are concerned, and of course just everyone else is concerned. Directed by, of course, Andrew Davis, and of course the main three in the cast were, of course, Steven Seagal, Tommy Lee Jones, and Gary Busey. And Busey's got he pretty much eats up all the scenes. Like he's definitely chewing up the scenery like there's no tomorrow. We've also got cinematography by Frank Tidy, music by Gary Chang. It was brought out by Regency Enterprises, Le Studio Canal Plus, which you can see on a lot of those DVDs now, folks, that are coming from overseas. Studio Canal Plus, a lot of the old action cinema that we know really well. Alcor Films as well, of course, distributed worldwide by, of course, Warner Brothers Pictures. Now, on a budget of $35 million, the film itself did $156.6 million at the box office. Surefire hit for that time and period, isn't it? Like, it's just huge. So, let's talk a little bit about the actual film itself. We'll get into some of the plots so that we can move on to the interesting stuff, which is, of course, how this all got made. All right, so Under Siege is all based around, of course, the battleship USS Missouri, which arrives at Pearl Harbor, where George H.W. Bush, so George Bush Sr., NASA's the ship's going to be decommissioned in California. And so this maiden cruise is where they're going to take the ship to where it's going to be decommissioned and basically put it in dry dock and just left. So we've got Captain Adams, who is having a birthday on the ship as well. And this is where the executive officer and commander, Krill, starts to put together basically a bit of a party, a bit of a send-off for, of course, the birthday of Captain Adams. And Casey Ryback is the chief petty officer assigned as the chef, or the ship builder, the cook. Or as they say in the Navy, the culinary specialist. Prepares meals for, of course, everyone on the ship. And at the start of the film, he's preparing it for the birthday party. And this is where we get to see some nice little scenes with, of course, our pal Ryback and, of course, Commander Krill. Or as he says, Commander Krill. So from here, we get to know a lot of the cast on the ship. So the opening scenes, we get to see Krill's men go down to where they're cooking all this amazing dinner with, of course, Ryback and his very loosely disciplined team down in the ship's galley, putting everything together. And when they go down there, obviously, they're told to, of course, assemble in a certain area. And, of course, Ryback says, I don't like surprises, and neither does his captain. And part of that surprise is there's a chopper coming in. A chopper comes and lands on the USS Missouri with, of course, the entertainment, the band. And, of course, leading the band is, of course, William Stranix, played by Tommy Lee Jones in one of his best roles. I mean, he's such a serious guy. You know, I've seen in interviews and vice versa. You know, he obviously takes, you know, he's real one of those old cowboys, really. You get down to it. But he's really eating this up. He's having fun. I think for Warner Brothers, even on Batman Forever, you know, he was somebody that was definitely having some fun, but also going completely, absolutely nuts at the same time. But with Tommy Lee Jones, he is one of those guys who really gets into character. You can tell, you know, there's no ifs, buts, and maybes. He is somebody that really loves taking on a character. Although I do believe his best role was in Space Cowboys alongside, of course, Clint Eastwood and Donald Sutherland. That was just beautiful to see all those guys together, and particularly, you know, with the age group of those guys was at a time where they're really playing up being senior on screen, and it was fantastic. But in this is great, yeah. You know, and he lets little bits and pieces of his performance inform you of who he's going to be by the end of the film, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But as it's coming down, we also see Erica Eleniak on there and, of course, the rest of the team, which may or may not be terrorists. but they could definitely play. They play in their music and stuff like that too. And again, it's a big blues band. So they set up down in the mess hall and start basically getting everything together. While Erica's character, Erica Eleniak, is put into a cake and she's basically the entertainment. Where they've also got down there, everyone getting set up with, of course, all the crew going down to enjoy the party. And, of course, Commander Krill then gets in drag and gets ready to be part of the party. And, of course, it really amps up the crowd. The crew are really having a great time. And this is why it's such a good twist when things go haywire. And they do rather quickly. So Commander Krill goes to Captain Adams, of course, cabin and kills him. And, of course, then steals all of the codes, the launch codes for the missiles, and, of course, is ready to rumble. From there, down the galley, we get to see Stranix and his team then kill one of the main officers and then, of course, commandeer the ship. From here, of course, they don't count on one person who didn't make it up to, of course, the party, and that is, of course, the man who's making the cheeseburgers and all that sort of thing down in the galley. That is, of course, the one, the only, Casey Ryback. And this is where things go. So without giving too much away, what happens is, of course, he resorts to his Navy SEAL training and, of course, sets a guerrilla war on that ship to regain it and, of course, save the day, save the crew. What's interesting is, and it's been out long enough, folks, you're going to have this spoil because it's just beautiful. But of course, William Stranix is the officer that Casey Ryback punched out for some sort of thing that happened in their career. And a CIA liaison that he was at the time knocked him out cold and, of course, lost his commission as a Navy SEAL and got demoted to, of course, petty officer on a ship. So a great way to roll around a film that's only, 100 minutes long or something like that too. So fantastic. So that is, in a nutshell, what the story is about. And of course, we have some great sequences in there. So let's talk about some of the people on the ship and we'll talk about some of the roles. So Steven Seagal plays Chief Petty Officer Casey Ryback, who is a former Navy SEAL and, of course, is now the specialist chef on the ship. Tommy Lee Jones plays William Stranix, a renegade, embittered former CIA operative who leads a team of terrorists. And of course, Wim Stranix is the one that, of course, did over Casey Ryback. Gary Busey plays Commander Peter Krill. And he's Missouri's commanding XO, if you like, but he's a corrupt XO and he's a sociopath who serves as an inside man for Stranix. And he's actually also the XO to Stranix. So he's kind of a double agent, if you like, you know, which is interesting. Erica Eleniak plays Jordan Tate, who's a playboy playmate, and as they say in the film, she's Miss July 89. But of course, Erica Eleniak was that also in real life. Interesting. But of course, she becomes Ryback's sidekick when he rescues her, and from there they go through. We also got Colin Meaney as Dormer, and he's the leader of the commandos that Gary Busey and, of course, Stranix have. This is at a time where I got to know Colin Meaney, you know, through some of the other material he'd been working on. And I think one of the things was Deep Space Nine, as of course he was in TNG as the chief engineer, of course, in Deep Space Nine. But what's great is he was the transport guy, I think, in TNG, if I remember right. But as that character grew into, of course, DS9, really got to know him better and better. And, of course, so much material since. Fantastic actor. And definitely, I think, for Star Trek and DS9, it was a character who, an actor, who brought a bit more reality into things. You know, it was a bit more like the rest of us. You know, it was interesting enough, and it was great to see those sorts of things taking place, because it's not every day that you see the likes of, you know, that sort of thing popping up. So it really worked. Okay, so what else have we got? We've got Andy Romano plays Admiral Bates. Now, of course, you would have seen him in a lot of material. Andy Romano is also in a TV show, or a TV pilot, based on a certain great character from the Destroyer novels. So you can chase that up yourselves, folks. You'll know exactly what I'm talking about, because we've covered it here on the show before. Dale Dye plays Captain Nick Garza. And, of course, Dale Dye was in the military himself. And in this one, he plays the advisor at a Navy SEAL who vouches for Ryback. But Dale Dye is basically a military advisor on films, and he's done it from Saving Private Ryan to, obviously, a lot of material since, right back to Platoon. So he's been involved with a lot of that. Nick Mancuso plays Tom Breaker. Nick, you'll probably know from Rapid Fire, many other movies. But Nick in this one basically is playing Stranek's former boss, and the one that put him into the hot seat and gave him all the stuff he knows. Because Nick is, although he's a good guy, he's heavily corrupt himself because of all the things that he set up and then pretty much just left. Damian Chapa plays Tac-Man. He was, of course, in Street Fighter 2, Street Fighter, I should say, the movie, but based on Street Fighter 2. And, of course, he played Ken in that one. Tom Wood as Private Nash, a naive United States Marine. Tom, you'll see in a lot of material by Andrew Davis, in particular U.S. Marshals. And I think he was in The Fugitive as well. Dennis Lipscomb plays Trenton, an NSA advisor. We've got Bernie Casey plays Commander Harris, the high-ranking officer on the Missouri. Glenn Morshower plays Ensign Taylor, an arrogant junior officer who hates Ryback. Well, I guess we'll just see what we'll see, won't we? You know, he says, Ryback, this is a surprise party. So, of course, you got all that. And, of course, Glenn Morshower is in, of course, the Transformers movies. And he's in a Ridley Scott movie as well, folks, who certainly know from, of course, back in the early 2000s, where, of course, he calls it Ryback. Their name is called Irene. That might let you know what that one's all about. Of course, Black Hawk Down he was in. Raymond Cruz plays as Ramirez in this. And, of course, he's Ryback's assistant and one of the many cooks in there. Sandy Ward is Callaway, Gunner's mate, who served in Missouri in the Second World War. And, of course, this great scene halfway through it where he gets to actually teach them how to use the guns on the Missouri itself. We've also got George Chung plays a commando, and of course he's Pitt's technical assistant in this one too. Kane Hodder is another commando, and Richard Andrew Jones is Pitt Strenick's technician as well. You'll also find a lot of the people on this one are involved in Andrew Davis's films. Particularly, you'll get to see people that are playing police officers in the past. Andrew Davis tends to keep that crowd around. From The Fugitive to the U.S. Marshals and stuff like that. Some of those, I do believe, are actual active police officers or something like that as well at the time. And again, they're definitely in those. But also some of the people that are being thrown around like ragdolls by Seagal are also some of his students. And that's why it sells a lot of those Sunkyos, those Nikyos, and, of course, Kotagaish. Yeah. So well, because they know how to react to it, how to feed the attack, and how to make it look good on screen. Because, at the end of the day, if it caught a guy from one of those things was done on somebody unsuspecting, yeah, they're probably not going to look as good, but it'll bloody hurt. Like anything in regards to wrestling or jiu-jitsu, it's going to hurt. And I don't know if stuntmen really know how to get around those unless they've been hanging around the John Wick set. Who knows? Or even a great jiu-jitsu movie, folks. If you're into Brazilian jiu-jitsu, which you know some of your listeners are, and hats off to you. It's great, great martial art in itself. One of the great things about that is you can watch a movie called Red Belt, who, you know, well, the film itself is all about, so it's a fight film, but it's also a mystery thriller kind of thing at the same time. But it really talks about the world of the fight schools and stuff like that too. So go and check that out if you haven't. It's directed and written by David Mamet. And of course, he's a very well-known writer and director. But also, David Mamet is a Brazilian jiu-jitsu stylist. So there you go. Check that out. So let's get into some of the production story as well. We won't spend too much time on this because I want to talk about some of the fight scenes. So the film was a spec script. And this is when they tailor a script. And it was one called Dreadnought. And it was hotly put out as $1 million spec script. Now, Warner Brothers wanted Steven Seagal in the film, but he didn't want to do it. So he said, basically, he had problems with the character itself. And it was also, you know, the characters, you know, that he was reacting against and with. But from there, of course, they built up the script and changed it. So basically, they were trying to make Steven Seagal more mainstream, the writer Lawton said. Get him out of that pure action genre into an acting role. Which is pretty much what this is. You know, if you take what we had previously, you know, in the other films, whether it's you know, Out for Justice, Mark for Death, in particular, those last two, yeah, they're straight up sort of martial arts fare, action fare. And, you know, not huge on story. It's more on the action scenes, action beats from one to the other. If that's what you're after, that's what you're after. But, of course, they wanted to build that up and make it more more acting orientated, and they did. And I think that's what's, you know, it's a rewatchable film because of that. So the director, of course, Andrew Davis, had worked with Seagal before on Above the Law, and Davis said, look, he had somebody called Terry Semel wanted them to get back together again and use Seagal only in the movie for 41 minutes. So that's basically what they're saying. He was only in the movie that long. Tommy Lee is in the movie longer than Steven Seagal. It was fine. It worked out well. We had a nice time, he says. But, of course, that's one interesting thing. You think about it, too. The other movies that he's done, with Tommy Lee Jones, The Fugitive and U.S. Marshals. There's not a lot of Harrison Ford in that one, and same with Wesley Snipes. So it's that balance of having, you know, the people pursuing the characters as well and really getting to know an even balance. And I think that's what's interesting, too, in this one, too. You get to see a balance between Seagal and the others, whereas I think maybe Seagal was in a lot more of the last few films that he had as well, too. So, were they on the Missouri? No, they were actually on the USS Alabama, which was serving as a museum in Mobile, Alabama. And so, they used that as the one as well, too. From here, of course, they put that together. And even though the original title was Dreadnought, it eventually came up to, of course, Under Siege. So let's quickly talk about some of the action scenes in this too. So obviously, there's a lot of gunplay. Particularly, we get to see two MP5s come across like this, which apparently is a Navy SEAL thing. Well, I think it's a bit more of a John Woo thing, but I mean, if it's a Navy SEAL thing, it is, I guess. There's some curious stuff in there. Even the way that we see Seagal grab his 1911, which is always his pride and joy in his films, then pushes the front of the slide near the barrel like this to load it. Interesting way of loading, of course, those weapons. Again, I'm not a firearms guy. I don't know enough about it, but it's an interesting way of sort of putting his stamp on how to load a 45, an M1911A1. So we get to see, basically, this is, in terms of firearms, an MP5 fare. And they even class the MP5 as an assault rifle in this. Okay. Well, I still was a submachine gun myself, but fair enough. But yes, so this obviously is, you know, a film which we get to see basically his skills as a Navy SEAL come up. So it's not just about the Aikido. It's not just about the firearms, but it's also his MacGyver ability with explosives, or turning things into explosives through microwaves. You know, just as Tommy Lee says, you know, he's a bomb, jackass. Use the microwave as a detonator. That dry wit in this. The bad guys all playing off each other is almost like Looney Tunes. That's, you know, you can't take it seriously, but it's really well done. This is why this movie works, and it works well. And it is the only 5 out of 5 one we're going to give Steven Seagal. I'll tell you this much when it comes to the, of course, Hallenbach scale. We'll get into that soon. Obviously, too, there's quite a few hand-to-hand scenes. There's a great scene where we get to see the team that of Stranix that's cutting up the pipes and obviously moving the missiles around the place onto, of course, a submarine that's coming across. But we get to see him take on a number of martial artists, one of them being the later Tong Po, after, of course, Mohamed Kissi. That is, of course, Kamil Khalifa, who is a very good friend, of course, of Jean-Claude Van Damme. So I wonder what Van Damme thought of his best buddy, Kamil Khalifa, working on Under Siege. Interesting. And, of course, he has a scene where he's starting to use the knife. Now, that is, of course, the big fight scene at the end against, of course, Stranix is done with a knife, and it's kind of done Filipino style to a certain extent. You know, it's reverse grip. So the knife is coming out the back of the hand. Now, as somebody who has and does a little bit of that work, I've never seen it done reverse grip. I would always do it the other way. I'd be too worried about your own arteries getting all cut open and stuff like that. But as far as fight scene itself, selling it on film, it looks really good. And it's done quite well. The only one I do question is when he's grabbing the knife with his teeth before he gives our dear pal, Mr. Tommy Lee Jones, a bit of a redirected face, if you like. But great fight scene. And I think that's the thing, is that it's a real mix. It's not just the martial arts. It's not just the gunplay. It's a fair amount of action across the board, which is different. And that's why it works. I think Andrew Davis just knew how to put all that on screen. So, this bad boy here. Folks, Under Siege. It is a solid 5 out of 5 here, of course, at the Lethal Mullet Podcast. And now you know why. I'm your host, Adam O'Brien. And, of course, I want to thank you for all joining us here for, of course, this episode, 225, Under Siege, folks. Oh, man, what a movie. Great film. And I hope you go and check it out. If you've got a chance to see it on a projector, do it, because you owe yourself to see it on the big screen. That's all for us here. Keep smiling, and bye for now. We'll catch you next time here on episode number 226 of the Lethal Mullet Podcast.